We are obviously coming to the end of the day, and we did overrun slightly, but I thought it would be obviously we, you know, in the plan for the whole event, going back to last night, we obviously wanted to have a chance to try and sort of assess what we've done and what people have said and all the kind of different materials that we've looked at. And I suppose I wanted to just maybe start the conversation, really, just in terms of where people saw this topic really going from here, you know, where people thought, you know, there are various people here who obviously written books, theses, articles and so forth around this whole question of, if you like, a first person filmmaking, within which we've tried to concentrate on self-portraiture, even if we've seen that self-portraiture tends also, you know, to drift towards autobiography and so forth. However, when, and also the letter film, which I think why it was interesting to show the Hazen, actually, the letter film. We could have talked about diary films and so forth. So I just wondered, really, that was one thing that occurred to me, was sort of where do people see the study of this topic going from here? I mean, one thing that occurred to me, I suppose, was really in terms of trying, would it be possible, could one imagine trying to define some sort of a corpus? Because it strikes me, you know, we saw this, the experimental films today, and that was, I think, for most people, probably a revelation to see those films. And how would one go about trying to sort of have a kind of general catalogue, if you like, of films around this area of self-portraiture? Is that something that would, you know, that one could imagine a kind of a group of people working on to produce a kind of a, you know, general filmography around this topic? And I suppose the other thing may be something that I know that Laura Buzetta has been talking about, is how the notion of self-portraiture could be taken into, if you like, digital media, social media, and so forth, maybe towards another kind of more perhaps broader social terrain. So those are the kind of things I was thinking about. We could talk about this final session, but obviously I'll go with whatever you want to say. And obviously I assume there'll be some questions coming from the floor.
I was wondering if perhaps we should talk about a bit about why we came up with the idea of starting with, you know, a self-portrait day.
Yes, I just wanted to answer to you. In fact, the question is about the corpus. Maybe we've got the first question is, does the filmmaker need to appear in his film to be a self-portrait? Is it the question of the body, the voice, or with the succor of this morning, it was really, you know, just his back, or just really, really unsure if he was or not? And maybe we've got the boundaries of the corpus here, or maybe not. Maybe that's the first question about the corpus. And yes, about the why the self-portrait, it was, I don't know, because it was the question about putting the self-portrait into the first person films. Yes, and because this question of the self-portrait goes, you know, as you say, letters, autobiographical, all the things we've been discussing during the day. Well, maybe you want to add something.
I think, I mean, there is one of the reasons, or at least, you know, when we first started to think about it, one of the ideas that I like, especially with the film experimental films, was that somehow the self-portrait seemed like the essence of self-representation, and, you know, one of the possible forms, obviously, but somehow this kind of, you know, you spoke yesterday about chemical precipitation, and it seemed like a good starting point for, you know, discussing, and obviously it goes in all sorts of directions. But it seemed, you know, like some beginning somehow, and then we tried obviously to include, you know, different forms that, you know, touch on different aspects, like as you said, the letter, etc. So the corpus, I don't know.
I mean the self-portrait, like the essay film, they resist clear boundaries, and that's the beauty of these. I'm even hesitant to say the word genre. I don't know how to call them, modes or what Muriel said about whether the director needs to be in the film, like to have the their body or their the record of their voice registered in the film. I'm not sure it's necessary. I think there are other ways of asserting presence. So say Robert Greenman had chosen to just put an empty chair and call that a self-portrait. Just the title would kind of define it, and you feel his presence through his absence. And there is always this kind of tension between, again, desire to show oneself or reveal oneself, and desire to conceal oneself and avoid exposing one's inner life, which I think Chantal Akerman's example is kind of a good one for that. Mm. But one thing I thought about, what you said about Laura's interest in the digital media, which I'm not sure what is it. But one thing I was thinking was that because we have all these modes of self-representation now, it's part of everyday life. So I was saying, to them the other day that it was a very topical subject, because people are doing that, are incorporating that in their everyday life. I mean, you have vlogs or other forms of audiovisual representation, but the extent to which that can be considered a self-portrait or self-represent or authorship, because, you know, it has to do with the intention mm-hmm. of the person. I mean, are they seeing themselves as artists? Are they using that to communicate?
Yeah,
I mean, what's the
self-expression? Mm.
Exactly.
Authorship.
When
when
do we put the boundaries?
And it is particular evident.
What you were doing.
Actually, I'm interested in the fact that in, you know, like digital technologies, self-representation, something changes. And for example, I was thinking about Tarnation, about Cahuete, in which these, I mean, boundaries between the author and the amateur, and maybe the artist or the just, you know, whatever normal person who is doing a self-portrait, is so evident, because it's like he's doing a self-portrait in terms of like affirming himself as an artist. So it's like we have all of these devices in which we can easily just record ourselves, and so how it changes, I mean, how self-representation can change in this changes scenario. Also because, you know, when you talk about, for example, online self-representation, it soon comes the, we can call like the collective experience, because first you are going to shoot yourself and be visible in, I mean, after a second, just to think at the selfies when you just take a photo of yourself to upload it on the internet. And also, so, I mean, the relationship with, I mean, such a imaginary audience is so in the act of the self-representation itself. And also about, I mean, a sort of collective dimension, because of we know that there are a lot of like online self-representation which people are talking about themselves, but then other people are like commenting on the same issues, like it happens on Facebook, on other like YouTube, people are doing collective projects. So I mean, some of the issues we discussed today, like about the presence of the other, inside the self-portrait, is so relevant in these new devices.
But I guess the digital is also changing things in the sense of alteration of, you know, the image and alteration of the self-image, which is something that, of course, has always been done, but if you want, in a slightly more complicated way. I mean, one of the things that really came across for me throughout the day is the question of technology and what it is like to do autobiography or self-representation through audiovisual technology. I mean, for a long time, there was even a sense that autobiography was not possible through film. And, you know, there was quite a rejection of the idea that it was possible to construct an autobiography mm-hmm. through film, precisely because of the characteristics of the medium. And I think, you know, that position has been entirely, you know, overcome by, by so many attempts at doing it, both through older technologies we've seen today, and then, you know, technology which is becoming more and more advanced, different, contemporary, which is going beyond the indexical, is offering the possibility of, you know, of molding the image in the most extraordinary ways as well, but which is something that the artist will always try to do, you know, shaping their own identity, their own self-image, you know, through all sorts of things like, you know, stratifying images or, you know, superimposition or etc. So I mean, for me, what you know, a day like this is you know, sort of like a little victory against, you know, that that sense, you know, that auto, you know, that the film is not the medium for autobiography. I mean, like as Laura was saying, like just look at the internet today. I know it's not film, but it's a post-filmic, you know, sort of use, you know, of audiovisual media, which is an extraordinary, which is going more and more and more towards the self-representation and the construction of the self in a very daily manner, in a very, you know, everyday manner, collaborative and, you know, and it's pervasive. I mean, you know, it's the internet is the most, I think, personalized, you know, thing that we have today. I mean, so, you know, you customize everything, you know, and you express yourself even just by customizing, mm-hmm. you know, and then creating, you know, the prosumer rather than just the user, etc. So I thought that what was extraordinary today was to see the variety of, you know, technologies and the way in which technology has been used mm-hmm. From quite early on to produce, you know, mm-hmm. self-images.
Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to what Cecilia was talking about yesterday about the question of presence and, mm. and well, presence and even nowness, and the fact mm. that obviously what comes with digital technology is the fact that, you know, it's becoming increasingly abstract mm. and maybe, I don't know, that's my the way I see it, but I think to go back to celluloid, you know, is a way of going back to haptic, obviously, vision, but just simply material matter, yeah. because probably, well, I think as a reaction to, you know, the abstractness of the digital, and clearly, I mean, at least in the examples I think that we've seen, it's all about, you know, physical inscription, and in that sense, it goes back to what you were talking about, like, you know, it has to be physical presence, and physical presence somehow seems to work much better on, you know, printing on celluloid rather than, you know, kind of digital.
It's so yeah. I mean, digital calls for a different kind of presence because it's ephemeral. Like, I have a friend on Facebook who posts videos of himself trying a different kind of cookie every day. He's there every day. I mean, nobody will forget. I don't, you know, I watched one when I saw he was doing a sequence. I'm not going to watch this. But, you know, it was like he does that every day. So it's like it's a desire to be present. Even but every single one of these videos are ephemeral and people won't remember because they're all the same. But it's a different understanding of presence. It's just, yeah. I don't know where to take that, but it's... I'm not sure I would define it as
you
What was the word we used? Did you absence? Mm. No.
No, not
abstract.
Abstract. I'm not sure.
Question.
It's the phenomena of having a million followers. You know, because there are lots of really quite young people who have their own channels these days, and they're kind of. Enacting themselves, they're kind of developing, a biographical, even somewhat sort of ironic, or even a stand-up presence. And, you know, they're very, very important because they're recording, in a sense, self-consciously, events in their daily life. And I think that is an extraordinary phenomena, and they're competing as well for positions. You know, because those channels are syndicated and they become, you know, a livelihood for a while, you know, for people. And, you know, I teach, and so I've got a number of students who, you know, are really out there in terms of developing strategies and techniques for being present online in the most extraordinary way. And they're borrowing from things that they've seen. They're eclectic, you know, so it's a, it would be a combination of, you know, larky humour, video games, you know, kind of ironic positioning, and you know, they bring these sort of forms together into something performative and new. I think that's, I think that needs to be explored, but we don't have the tools to explore it necessarily here or yet.
Yeah, I agree with what you say. I mean, sometimes I just see this kind of online self-representation as a way of using the camera to kind of test the subject, like in a screen test. I mean, like it's doing a performance for the camera in order to be to play different roles that are going to be showed. And so it reminds me, for example, Andy Warhol's screen test, in which, you know, people acted as superstar in front of the camera, like, and this kind of stardom completely changed it, and it, they actually invented this superstardom, which was like being in front of the camera makes you feel like a star. So it's just, you know, kind of struggle with the camera itself to see if one can, I don't know, like hold this gaze and be like successful.
Or Salem Cinema by Mark Mulvath, which is also about screen tests, isn't it? He's auditioning for a film. It's about their reaction to the camera and the director, the presence of the director. I was wondering if the word would be like, it was more about virtual presence rather than abstraction.
When I was looking for my word, I was thinking it's not necessarily, you know, the most satisfactory word, abstract, but what I was...
Virtual presence. Because there's such an emphasis on
What I meant to say was more that, you know, there has... Well, there is obviously an emphasis on this kind of materiality, I suppose, of, you know, celluloid film, and I think that that's what the filmmakers are usually interested in when they're when they're using those formats.
Yeah,
but you're right, it's virtual.
Yes, at the back.
Yeah, a bit of question. Well, you talked about a corpus, and I was asking myself, why did you start with films? Well, the earliest film we saw was Jonas Mekas' self-portrait, which is from the 80s. So a bit of question about what happened before. Laura Rascaroli also mentioned that there was like this belief that it was impossible to do self-portraits in film. So a bit of question, so why did we start with 1980s films? What happened before? What has that to do with this kind of beliefs and with building a corpus, or I don't know.
Maybe you could add something after that. It's a very interesting question. When does it start? I think it's really, or having the historical view of that. And I think it's, you know, during what you said about technology, maybe there's something we could ask or, you know, search a bit more about the tech, you know, how it appears with maybe home movies, so the light technology, so Super 8 and before that Pathé Baby or things like that. So it could happen when it was something you could do at home, you know, literally, and then you are on your own with the camera, with the technology. So maybe we could go further with that and follow the, you know, the history of technology and the light technology. And for example, this film from Cocteau or Man Ray, and they were doing films or home movies, literally. And because they were Jean Cocteau or Man Ray, of course, then it became something else. And then we are again in this question of self-representation and authorship. But the film of Jean Cocteau is really, really interesting, and he's showing his works. It's and he said, I want to use 16mm, because I say to young people, oh, you need to go and try technology. So now I need to do that for me as well. Otherwise, you know, I say I'd give lessons and I need to do it as well. And for Man Ray, it was, he was just, you know, shooting his holidays with Éluard and lots of really famous people, thousands of friends, and it becomes kind of a document about that, but it's true, and then it's a self-representation. And I think it goes very, very, very far if you think about the how to try a camera, the Frères Lumière, they try camera and they film the repas de bébé. So it depends where you going with that, but I think maybe one of the question could be through the history of technology, maybe. I think it's really interesting.
Absolutely, and also through the history of experimental cinema, because that's been the fertile ground for, you know, sort of first-person representation. So I think, you know, it's usually, well, first of all, in the home movie, but then also in the spheres of experimental cinema that you find examples. And also quite early examples. But yeah, I mean, there is a sense also that video, for instance, has really sort of given in, has had an impact on this history of representing the self audiovisually, probably because, you know, it's a very experimental sort of genre, if you wish. And, you know, it's you don't experiment that easily with 35 millimeter, or, you know, whereas
with the light.
Whereas video has given another impact then to that, and there's quite a lot of video artists who have started experimenting. So again, we are talking about the same decades again. So yeah, the technology and the genre, I guess, are the two elements. Although, you know, then of course, it depends on how broadly also you open it up. I mean, there have been autobiographical director, like if you think about fiction cinema, which is another field, you know, is a very different approach, if you want, but it's not disconnected, you know, like if you think about authors who have been particularly autobiographical, you know, like I'm just Fellini, for instance, you know, so fiction cinema as well has something to contribute to this history, although quite differently again, you know.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Just to say, it's been a really insightful day, and there's been a kind of great review of works from kind of the 1970s to the early 2000s, and it's been fantastic to sort of discuss and hear people talk about the different tools and techniques used within this kind of genre or mode of self-portraiture. I'm just wondering about kind of now and contemporary filmmakers kind of working in this mode, and one person that springs to mind is like Hito Steiler, who has an exhibition coming up at the ICA, who firmly places herself within you know, the filmmaking, within the film, but also kind of exposes the process of making. And I just wondered if there are any other examples of filmmakers that you
Sarah
know
Turner's
of
Perestroika.
Sarah Turner,
yeah, Perestroika. It's about a train. She talked about she reconstitutes a train journey that she made 20 years ago in the Trans-Siberian. Mm-hmm. So it's her voiceover, her image reflected on the window, and she talking about herself as a fictional character sometimes, but with a lot of autobiographical elements in it. And it's very visual, and it's all about frames, because everything is framed through the train window. I think it's a very interesting...
It might be worth saying, Cecilia, it's showing at 1 o'clock tomorrow at the
is
ICA.
It?
Yes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Followed
there
by
go.
with the director.
Oh, okay.
Perestroika.
Yes.
Mm. Could I actually, would you mind, because I think you wanted to ask a question.
I just wanted to come back to Zokurov's word of too human. So the self is the self-portrait, is the human self-portrait. And in a sense, at a time where maybe a lot of television documentaries are about a self-portrait show of the presenter, because the reaction shot gets longer than actually the look at the world. And also, and I just wondered, where is the non-human world? Where is what doesn't have to do anything with the artist and the self? So it also comes back to what you said about narcissism. And I exclude, I think, Zokurov and Chantal Akerman, I exclude from that. But I thought even the camera is, of course, a human-made camera. It's about the control of the artist, and it all comes back to the self. So despite it being a fragmented self, it still is a human self. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. As an immediate response, I would say it's exactly what, you know, some of you said about matter and inscribing itself in certain ways. You know, you could also talk about noise, you know, that's accidental, you know, what we had with the organic, and you know, a few of these things kind of, you know, almost either accidentally or very intentionally coming through as some sort of element that may have been not planned or may be the other, you know, in inverted commas, part of the self. So I think there is a lot of, you know, that going on in all of these examples. There is a human kind of, you know, an anthropological kind of, you know, take, granted, but I think there's actually quite a lot happening, you know, and you were saying it, you were mentioning it before, on that kind of, you know, what we would call in the broadest sense meta, you know, mattering, you know.
Actually, you know, when I was coming up with this not so, you know, happy words, abstract, and then, you know, virtual, and another word that comes to mind, obviously, is, you know, it's kind of matter versus disembodied texture, or not even texture, disembodied surfaces. And I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to, you know, body, really. And, you know, when we talk about matter, and it's, you know, sometimes you talk, I mean, in the films that we saw, there's a lot of almost kind of puns and play on words about, you know, the body of film, the body of the filmmaker, etc., and somehow this, you know, it kind of merges at some point. And to come back to the, you know, digital, maybe that's where the kind of difference is about, you know, this issue of the body, your disembodiment, or, I mean, I don't know what you think about.
One thing that I always think about noise and the activism is that they call attention to process, which is very important in the idea of self-portrait, which is about the work as much as it is about the person producing the work, or it's very much about showing the person producing the work, and calls attention to the film as film, and therefore acquires a meta linguistic quality or meta filmic quality.
Just to add that, I mean, if one looks at the history of the self-portrait before cinema and during and after cinema, that concept itself has changed a lot. So, I mean, and, you know, if it started with the self-image, you know, the drawing the self, the painting the self, but it has, you know, so if you look beyond cinema, there's a lot, you know, a lot has happened since, and you know, artists have, I don't know, bottled liters of their blood, you know, as a self-portrait, for instance, or, you know, trace the bodily trace as well. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, there are artists also who leave bodily traces on film, and that's, you know, a self-portrait, like, you know, licking the, literally the film, or crying on the film, you know, etc. So the concept itself is so broad in ways, and of course, also maybe we come back to the first question, you know, how do you limit it, where do you stop, you know, and where do you stop, where does it become autobiography, where it becomes diary, where, you know, it's and I think Cecilia, I think it was you who said, you know, the intention, I think, you know, the I agree with you, you know, that you know, to an extent, maybe, you know, it's the intention, it's the gesture, you know, it's when the artist says, I am representing myself, whether it is through a drop, you know, of you know, or saliva, or an image, or a painted image, or so, but there is a kind of a self-conscious act, I think, at some point, that is probably the, you know.
Okay, maybe just one more question, I think. Do you want you to ask the question?
Yes, exactly. Following on from Laura Rascaroli's point, what are the limits of the portrait, of the self-portrait? And so I was interested, because I noticed that some, for instance, Elegy of a Voyage, that as well, the fluidity of cinema, that kind of traces very, very liquid borders
of the self-portrait, and also the self, paradoxically, the self-portrait, Jonas Mek, as I was telling you earlier, in my opinion, that self-inscription, that narcissism that he plays with, it kind of traces the contours that of a, the limits of the self-portrait in one way, as in he's trying to say, am I really, because to me that was also a gesture towards, say, a René Magritte type of gesture with the hat, saying, ceci n'est pas une pipe. You know, this is not a pipe, this is the representation of what you're saying. So this is a portrait of myself, but it's also a representation. So I'm interested to see, to maybe explore sort of the element of performance, you know, and how that can push the boundaries of the self-portrait, so the authenticity, you know. And I suppose narcissistic, the narcissistic side of the artist wanting to say, to make a manifesto about his own practice, that is kind of different from, that you can do, it can be more effective maybe with indexical media, in one way, if you want to make the argument, is quite different from saying, this is a self-portrait about myself, this is a self-portrait, and let's discuss this. Is it really so? And it's kind of the same with Sokurov. Yeah, for me, those two elements, they are so different, yet they say, actually, the borders of the self-portraits could be explored a little bit more.
I mean, there is, you know, ultimately you come also to the point of the authenticity in the performance, that each performance is fake. I mean, performance in itself, you know, even just the etymological, you know, set of meanings, you know, is that of artifice, etc. But there is an authenticity in the performance, and so there is an element, you know, that is representing or self-representing something authentic, I guess. Yours was a complex question, but it's certainly that's something that triggered in me, you know, is the idea of, you know, seeking authenticity in performance.
Yeah. And playing with that, and sort of being asking for the attention, asking for participation, contribution, which may lead us to think about contemporary digital media and participatory activities in the making of personas and self-portraits. I mean, how much can you call that self-portrait when it's contributed from different parts? Of course, it can be redefined as a genre, but it kind of changes with a new technology, maybe.
But it's interesting what you're saying, because the clips and the kind of excerpts that I talked about, for a long time, I kind of refrained from calling that self-portrait, because the mise-en-scène is so obvious that, to me, rightly or wrongly, you know, there was this sense that, you know, the self-portrait, there had to be some kind of absence of mediation about it. And then, well, I kind of realized that, well, no, why not? But it is a question that I haven't really come to terms with, and it's true. I mean, you know, where do you put the kind of boundaries in terms of also the intention and your mise-en-scène gesture, so to speak.
It's down to digital media and social media, different social media platforms that kind of generate this instability of the self-portrait.
Yeah. Again, it's maybe something about the there we're talking about the boundaries of cinema, yeah. A movie, hard video, and performances. There's something, and self-portrait goes through that, in fact. So, and you need to, you can't talk about self-portrait in cinema without talking self-portrait in, you know, performances, art video, painting, photography. So then that's what maybe the corpus is, you know, you need to gather with technologies as well, historical questions. And so that's the why it's so rich as well, and it's so, you know, interesting, because you need to go through lots of questions as well.
I was wondering if this pervasive urge of visibility, which is a strong characteristic of visual media and social network, can be so a way to
sign a boundary between self-portrait and this new social practices is the lack of self-consciousness. So maybe the fact that people need to be visible all the time through the media is something that lacks the fact that you are representing yourself. I don't know if I expressed what I meant.
Maybe it's something that the I don't know, the notion of intimacy, privacy, everything changed completely.
Yeah.
So then you need to deal with that as well. And because if self-portrait is about, you know, saying something private, saying something about your intimacy, and if it changes, you need to change with that. With the So yeah, again, it's another big question. You open another, you know, plenty of shelves of books, and something you need to go through. So yes, but if you need to go that. I was very interested in the differentiation between self-expression and the authorship as well. So maybe
just very quickly, that might not be about self-representation. It's about communicate, talking to somebody. But it's like instead of using a phone, you use a video. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, so I mean, what's the boundary between posting a video of yourself on Facebook to say something, announce something, and calling somebody on Skype? That's not self-representation. That's audiovisual communication. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. the boundaries there are interesting. I mean, we have to rethink them.
Yes.
Right. I'm thinking that it might be time just to wrap things up. It's been an excellent day. It's been a long day. I personally. Sorry. Oh, Laura's meant to say something. Did you want to say something?
Well, I called. I'm on the programme.
Oh, I'm sorry, Laura. When, do you want to come and say something?
No, stay there.
All right.
So I just thought, as I'm on the programme, I hope I should say something. It said 5 minutes. Laura called. And then you wrap it up.
Okay.
So five minutes.
5 minutes to Laura.
You can start me off. No, I could just stand here. I just wanted to use my 5 minutes or less to think about the extraordinary variety of films that we've seen today. And I was thinking particularly about what we can get from the 16mm and the specificity of the medium, as we used to say in the old days, and how it reminded me that someone said at some point today that in the tradition of self-portraiture, the artist would paint themselves as the most easily available, cheapest, and most easily managed model. So I felt very much that in the 16 mil, I don't know what Muriel will think, that there's a sense in which the filmmakers were actually doing things with the materiality of film and the camera itself as an object, which they couldn't necessarily ask anyone else to do. There was a kind of extraordinary intimacy. And sometimes it reminded me of as though they were playing with their favorite pet, as though the camera was like their cat, you know, and they were kind of playing an elongated game with what can you get this creature to do that it wouldn't normally, what tricks would it, can you get it, your pet to do. So there was that, I felt there was a way in which the filmmaker could play with the object camera, and in a way that perhaps people wouldn't nowadays. They would talk to their camera much more than play with it. Whereas in the old days of the 16mm camera, there was a sense that it was an object with a mechanism, and it was something that worked and had its own life, rather than something that you, as it were, talked to more. So that was one thing I was thinking about those movies, the intimacy, and where the voice, it's the only time that we don't really hear a voice. And there's something, it's about the relationship with the machine. So that was the main thing I wanted to say. But I was also very struck by the way that if we go back to the movie we started with last night, The Kramer, and the Sokurov,
and the Hazan, they're all people who, as it were, been asked to comment on their times, mm-hmm. and they were using themselves as a filter to filter through a political. They were using themselves almost like a litmus paper, mm-hmm. which was responding to a situation of Thatcherism, anyway, everything that Laura was saying this morning about the Sokurov and also the Kramer, you know, when he was responding to the experience of being in Berlin as an American and the kind of problems that it faced him as a person. And then about Mikas and Ackermann, I saw them both as artists trying to kind of think about how they would approach the self-portrait as an aesthetic problem. Yeah. You know, how would they make this thing work? And there was a minimalism, I think, that was important to both of them, and as important to both of them as artists. I mean, both Mikas and Ackermann are minimalists in a way. Mikas, one might say, I don't know whether one say one was more or less than the other, but both of them seem to have been saying to themselves, how can I, in confronting this problem, I need to strip it down and take away every single frill and frippery, as it were, and just show myself as much as I can and what my make my thoughts transparent. But I was very interested by Deutsch because I couldn't fit him. Mm. I couldn't fit him in anywhere. He seemed to be both filtering, using himself as a filter, but also thinking about using himself as he seemed to cross the different kinds of categories, and yes. And in my role as Marlene's supervisor, and she's writing about Deutsch in her thesis, it's something we can pursue further along the road. But I then just wanted to say not only thanks to all of you for just the most magnificently managed day and the multiple means of projection and the pleasure of having 16mm and 8mm here in the Birkbeck Cinema, and we're going to keep on, aren't we, Michael? We're
certainly
going to do it more often. And thank you all for wonderful presentations. And it's been a really fun day, and also wonderful audience. Thank you all so much.